Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the first ever Philly Press Box Radio Friday Night Keg Party. I'm Bill Furman, and I'll be hosting this party. I've asked some of the most passionate Philadelphia sports fans I know to join me tonight. And what a group it is. We have Fred Hugo, Frank Kolachny, Kyle Lutz, and my partner Jim Chesko with us tonight. Between the five of us, we cover from ages 25 to 55. So we'll give views both young and older. Notice I didn't say old, Chet.
Thank you.
So sit back, grab your red Solo cup and a beverage of your choice, and join us for the party. It's time to get it going. Our phone lines will be open throughout the show at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call in and join the party. We will ask that when you call in that you ask a question or make a comment, and we'll answer it, or the guys will answer it, whoever you direct the question to. And we ask that you listen to it off the line so we can keep the party going and keep the calls coming. So let's get it rolling. Fred, how are you doing tonight?
Doing good. How are you, Bill?
Good, good. I hope you have that Solo cup full. And I've been thinking about you a little bit, and I know you're a big hoops fan. So I wanted to ask you what you thought about the. What you thought about the Sixers season? Would you know tanked or smart or what? The way they cleaned out the roster and have themselves set up for the draft. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more with the way they did it. And when Joshua Harris said the season was a success, I know a lot of people took that negatively, but in the grand scheme of things, you got to build through the draft, and that's the way to get successful. So hopefully we get one of the top three picks. And personally, I want Jabari Parker.
So you're happy with that product of 40, 50, 30-point losses over and over?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. We had the tank. I mean, what are we going to just sit in La La Land with Andre Iguodala and Thaddeus Young and be 43-40, be an eighth seed, and hope for Derrick Rose to get injured to get to the next round? It was just a repetitive cycle of being stuck in the same place. I mean, the Celtics did it. They didn't get in the lottery, and then they made some trades to make themselves better. Besides the Heat, I don't really see any other team that hasn't progressed to the next level without losing or becoming a high lottery pick.
Well, what do you think, Frank?
I'm totally against what he just said. First of all, I was a season ticket holder for every sports team down there. I had seats on the floor directly across the floor from the visitors' bench. The reason I gave, you got to remember, this whole fiasco started and they never recovered. Back when they got rid of Andre Miller. They never recovered from that loss. When they started trading everybody away, and I'm looking around, spending $1.95 a night, it's a $500 night down there with two people in your evening, and I'm going to sit there through 9,000 people in these seats with that product that they're putting on the field? Absolutely not.
So do you feel like they tanked the season? Or at the end they just weren't very good. They just didn't have enough players that were any good.
No, there's no question about it. I mean, they went out of their way to make sure everything was status quo. They tanked this season. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Even the most professional people that are around this game more than I am and anybody else admittedly said so.
Kyle, what's your thoughts?
Well, I see both of your points. I agree with Fred, though. I understand from a fan's perspective what Frank was saying. Obviously, you're paying money to go there every night, but you know you're paying money for your favorite team. You got to understand that at a certain point, it's just a vicious, repetitive cycle. Like Oklahoma City in basketball, they had to they had to start losing. You know, when they were Seattle, in order to start getting draft picks. I mean, you look at another sports as well, like Pittsburgh in the NHL. They tanked for 3 or 4 years, and they got Crosby, Malkin, and they also got Fleury, and they won a cup because of it. So, a lot of times you got to tank in order to rise, you know, back up to the top of the standings again. And we haven't been very good recently. And as far as trying to be like a 7 or 8 seed. Like Fred said, you got to rely on an injury, and which we did with Derrick Rose the 1 year versus Chicago. So I'm all for the tanking.
Yeah, and I
what
agree
do you
also.
Think?
I mean, you know, it's unfortunate for the guys like Frank who maybe are paying money and have to go down there and watch that direct, but it just had to be done. You can't stay in the middle of the pack and win 35, 40 games, squeeze into the playoffs every year. It's something that had to be done. So, yeah, they were awful after the All-Star break, after they really cleaned house. But, you know, that's the way it is. Maybe they found a couple of guys who can be bench players in the process, like Sims. And, you know, they are going to be better and better each of the next 2 years. They have to be with the number of draft picks they have this year. They're going to get a top five pick, hopefully a top three pick, and then hopefully New Orleans pick, which will be around number 10. And hopefully they'll do it right and get a couple of guys who can play. Hopefully Nerlens Noel will be healthy and ready to go next year as the center. So, I mean, they're probably not going to make the playoffs this coming year, even president or chief executive said that the other day, but they are going to make some strides, and then hopefully 2 years from now they will be a playoff team and maybe even can make a playoff run. So, you know, yeah, they tanked, but so be it. It had to be done. I'm okay with it.
I guess let me ask you guys this. I mean, with all that said, and I'm hearing what you're all saying, but I guess my question is, Is Philadelphia, or the Philadelphia 76ers, a place where a big-name free agent is ever going to want to come play? Or is our history too bad, and are we just going to have to do this thing through the draft? I mean, you know, there's a handful of big guys out there, big-name players. Would any of them ever want to come play in Philadelphia?
I think so. I think after you have to bring some guys here, you know, you get Wiggins or Parker, like, you know, Chet was saying, you know, you get a top guy, they want to play with great players. And they're not going to want to play with the crop of players we have now. And obviously, what I meant to say and what Chet reinforced, Nerlens Noel can get healthy. That's going to also rise up the stock of, you know, who wants to come here. And then they see the plan for the future and the team in a couple off seasons from now or after this upcoming season's off season. If we win 35 to 40 games or on our way to making a playoff run, numerous free agents are going to come. Plus, if you throw them money too, a lot of guys will overlook, you know, even if you prepare the previous season.
What I keep hearing from everybody is if. Well, guess what? We have no idea what Nerlens Noel is. We have no idea about the damaged goods there. We have no clue, and we have a history of this. The fact of the matter is this team's 5 years out, minimum. That's a fact. Whether we have, you know, whether you like to hear it or not, you're talking from your heart instead of your head. It's just a fact that this team, I disagree. I don't like the fact that people are going to say nobody's going to come here. We've had people here before. They will come here. But you're going to have to surround them with other people.
Who?
I agree, whether it's going to be through the draft or whatever. You can't expect somebody like Parker to come in here as a rookie and just light it up and turn his franchise around. It doesn't happen that way. It's very few and far between. You're not looking at a Michael Jordan. Those players come around once every two decades.
Who is going to come here? If you don't have a star... you draft good players to the draft. Who's going to come here? And then my other question is, if they're not going to tag and get a high draft pick, Frank, what do you suggest they do? Like, what are they going to do?
Well, you know, this whole mess started with trading all the talent away, little by little by little. I mean, you know, that affected everything from the locker room to the bench all the way down. I mean, it was a never-ending cycle here. I'll tell you who I would love to see here. I would love to see McDermott here.
I'm with you on that one, Frank.
I was just down in Raleigh, North Carolina for that tournament, the regionals down there. And I'll tell you what, some of the highlights of stuff that we had an opportunity to see. Now, Jabari Parker didn't even show up down there. He was a no-name down there. He didn't even show up. But as I progressively watched the tournament go on and on and on, and as the season progressed, I really, really liked what I saw with McDermott.
Yeah, I do as well.
Keep in mind, also, he did not have any stars around him, unlike Parker.
That's a good point.
Whether or not, like, when you think that's the answer, McDermott?
I don't know if he's the answer, but I do know one thing: the kid's a player.
He's a player. He can shoot. He's 6'8". Some people are wondering if he doesn't really have a position. I mean, he's listed as a small forward. But, I mean, a guy who can score like that and can shoot like that, they will find a spot for him and make it work. And, you know, you put him in there with a Jabari Parker or Wiggins or whoever they get with the second or third or even first pick, plus, you know, Thaddeus Young and Michael Carter-Williams, you know, you're going to have a pretty good nucleus right there. And I don't know that I agree with Frank that it's a fact that they're 5 years away. They might be 2 or 3 years away from competing if they get the players that they're supposed to get, if Brett Brown is the coach that I think he is, and if Sam Hinkie's as smart as, you know, most of us think he is as a general manager. They could turn this thing around within 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and I think... go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to go ahead and close this one out, but I wanted to ask Frank real quick, since you were the season ticket holder, what's it take to get you to put your money back out there?
I'm going to have to see a total commitment from ownership. I'm going to have to see. I'm really going to have to see something out of Brett Brown. It's a little early for me to judge on him right now. I can't put the onus on him from last season, but I'm going to have to see a real, real nice draft here with these two picks. And then, you know, they're going to have to show me something in the postseason to get me back as a holder.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, hey, let's shift gears a little bit. And Frank, I wanted to throw something else at you while we got your juices going a little bit. I want to ask you what your thoughts were on the Eagles draft, the signing of Marcus Smith as the number one, the free agent signings, and do you feel like that they've improved their defense enough to be part of the elite in the NFC?
I absolutely do. I was like most people, I believe, when this draft hit with when they were sitting there at 22, they had two good players that they were after that went right in front of them, and then trading down. But after I calmed down a little bit, because I wasn't happy with that pick, because I did some I always keep my stuff. I keep a board of five. I go five rounds. I keep a board. I had that guy going late four, maybe a fifth rounder. But we also have to sit back and think they got a pick for him. I really like this draft. I like the way it really really shipped out. I'm also of the theory. Now, I coach college ball and I coach high school ball at the 4A level. Not professing to be a master at anything, but I'm under the a different mantra of I don't believe in the whole defense wins championships things anymore. I'm under the assumption right now, what I'm seeing in the NFL turning point right now, is defense will win you games, but outscoring those defenses is what's going to win you championships. And you're starting to see that turn now in the NFL, and that starts with Chip Kelly. Now, you know, he has a program that has, you know, wavered from Seattle runs a version of a lot of stuff. New England runs it. It's an up-and-coming system that's going right now. I really like what they did on the board this year. I really do. I think a lot of people are going to be jacked up with this Jordan Matthews guy. I really like this guy. I think he's going to be a nice, productive player. But I disagree with a lot of people who had said that you got seven players sitting there that are going to make this team. If you got seven players going to make this team rookies right away, you got issues.
Right. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, I like the way they put together the draft. A lot of people, myself included, and I know Frank had said it, weren't really keen on the first round pick. But Smith last year second in the league in the in collegiate ball in sacks, 14.5. So they really needed a pass rusher on the front line on the defense, and obviously he'll play linebacker now under under the 3-4 scheme. So I thought that was a good move. You know, got Connor Barwin and Trent Cole there, and he'll learn under them, and Cole's getting up there in age. So I like that move. They picked up a couple of wide receivers, and they got Malcolm Jenkins, obviously, in the offseason. I thought that was a good move. And I see this offense being as dynamic as they were last year. Maybe, you know, some defenses pick up on it, but I see us going, 9 or 10 wins.
All right. What do you think, Chet?
I agree, and I like the draft as well. And like everybody's saying, you know, they probably took Marcus Smith a little too high. They didn't have to take him late in the first round. They probably could have gotten him in the second round. But, you know, as Mark Eckel noted the other night, they did need a guy who could rush the quarterback, a guy who could play outside linebacker and get to the quarterback. And he had 14.5 sacks. So clearly the guy can do that. He seems to be a smart young guy as well. So, you know, hopefully he will be a contributor this year. He's not going to be an every down player. We know that already, but he will be a contributor. And hopefully, you know, the following year when Trent Cole is probably gone, Smith will be the guy rushing the quarterback from outside linebacker position. I do like Jordan Matthews a lot, too. I know a lot of people are high on him. He's got size, 6'3", 212. He's got decent speed. And, you know, they're going to use him in the slot. He's a big guy to play in the slot, but he looks like he is a player. And I'm really excited to see what he can do with Macklin and Cooper and Sproles and Shady and all those offensive weapons. That's going to be a fun team to watch. And I think they're going to win at least 10 games now that I think about it. And I'm ready to start training camp now.
All right. What do you think, Fred?
Yeah, Frank, I agree with everyone, but I couldn't agree more with Frank. I was like, when they first made the pick, I was so angry. Like, I couldn't believe it. But then after you cool down and you see the analysis that, you know, a lot of mock drafts had them going third or fourth, but then other scouts and other people said the NFL GMs may have had them going in the second round, and if the Eagles had waited, they wouldn't have gotten him. Because if you flip-flop the picks and put Marcus Smith in Jordan Matthews' spot and vice versa, then you're good with it, in my opinion. So
yep.
I'm happy with the draft. I mean, I wanted the corner out of Clemson, but then after they took the corner out of Florida, I saw that he's versatile, he played safety, and from what I read, he's very intelligent as well. I also love that they're all seniors. They went 4 years, and they're seniors, so they're hard workers, and they're ready to they set a goal to get through college, and they obviously hit that goal.
All right, well, I'm going to tell you, I hate to poke holes in your party cups, you know, where your drinks might drip out, but I'm telling you what, I could not disagree with you guys much more.
Boom.
And Frank, I just, as I said the other night, I don't see the impact players. I just don't see a difference. Now, the free agents I kind of like. The draft I don't like as far as just putting a guy in there that's going to make a difference right now. I just don't see it. And you know, Smith's not going to be a starter. Matthews probably will be a starter, but maybe not. I just don't see a guy that's going to jump in there and make it happen. And Frank, I have to say, because I am probably the oldest dinosaur in this at this party, but I can't disagree with you anymore about offense is going to win championships. I just don't see it. You saw the number one offense by far, the Broncos, against the number one defense of Seattle, and Seattle
just
beat them to death.
Yeah.
And I just don't see that changing when it comes down to the rubber hitting the road. Defense is going to win. And Chip Kelly, you know, if you look back 1 year, just 1 year to Kaepernick and RG3 and those guys and running that new offense, and it was great until the guys had an off season to prepare for it. And these defensive coaches are pretty darn good. And they didn't run a whole lot of that last year. Teams were still successful. Those teams were still good. Mm-hmm. But they didn't run that offense quite as much because these defenses prepare for it. And I think that's one of the big things that faces Chip Kelly this year, is these defenses are going to be ready for some of the things that they didn't know he could do last year.
That's a good point, though. Also, I do still think defense wins championships. I do agree with you on that point. I agreed with everything Frank said except that part. I forgot about that. But, I mean, yeah, you're right. The second year coming out. But I still think Chip Kelly's smart enough that he's going to adjust to the competition, as opposed to a former coach that would continually run the same stuff, hoping the defense would magically change and continue to move it. I think Chip, once the defense adjusts to him, then he's going to adjust as well. So,
well, he hasn't run.
Well, and I sure hope so.
Keep in mind also, he never ran the same exact offense any year that he's been coaching at the NCAA level. Now, I'm sure that's going to translate right back into the NFL. And let's also keep in mind, I guess we can paraphrase my point a little bit more by just saying the league itself has changed this league to be more offensive. They have structured penalties in this league that it's all about the offense right now. And the fullback The fullback is pretty much non-existent out of the NFL anymore. You have a handful of teams using them, and you don't have the 1,000-yard rushers like you used to have anymore because everything is predicated upon the pass rate.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly with that. You know, and I think it's all pretty relative where the best offense now, where it might have scored 30 points a game, now scores 50, and the best defense gives up 24 instead of 14. You know, I think it's you're definitely right there, but I think at the end of the day, the defense still shines. Okay, let's slide along, Kyle.
Yep.
I was thinking about you a lot on this as I was thinking this up a little bit. I wanted to ask you your thoughts on Claude Giroux. And Claude Giroux being a Hart Trophy finalist along with Ryan Getzlaff and Sidney Crosby. I know you follow the Flyers very closely, and was just wondering what your thoughts were with Giroux and the fact that he made the final three.
Yeah, I actually wrote an article on this on TSP a couple of days ago supporting the fact that I think Giroux should be the winner. You know, obviously Crosby had more points, and then Getzlaff, I think, had a point greater than Giroux. But Giroux led the league in points from mid-December onward. Pittsburgh also has, I think, as much talent and depth the Flyers have on offense, Pittsburgh has just as much, if not more. I mean, obviously you have Malkin, and you have guys, snipers like James Neal. So, you know, Philadelphia doesn't have Crosby to his advantage. He has a Malkin. Philadelphia doesn't really have that. Wayne Simmons is good on the power play. Scott Hartnell is good in bits and pieces. You know, Braden Schenn scored 20, et cetera. But, so that's really one of the reasons why I think Giroux should win the Hart. Two, he just, when the team goes, he goes. Most of the losses this year were, I don't have the stat in front of me, but I know I did in the article, were games where Giroux didn't have a point or few shots. So, I definitely think on and off the ice he makes a big impact. I mean, I know this year he didn't have the series like he did, you know, the infamous series a couple years ago in the quarterfinals versus Pittsburgh when he had the big check on Crosby and then the first goal that kind of paved the way for, you know, the onslaught of goals. But I think, you know, hockey, like any sport, is a team sport, so people are going to say, oh, well, Giroux didn't carry the team in this series versus New York, and obviously we also didn't have Steve Mason for a few games, too. So I definitely think due to his own skill talent and how consistent he was after they brought in Berube, considering we had two coaches and how he is off the ice, I definitely think he deserves it.
Yeah, he deserves to be considered, I guess, but I would still go with Crosby, much as that pains me to say that. I mean, Giroux's first month of the season just killed his chances, I think. And, you know,
yeah,
it's based on the full season, so I got to go with Crosby.
That's a good point. You know, he wasn't as consistent, and, you know, I would go with Crosby, too. It's just that none of his teammates like him, it seems, and obviously a lot of people around the league don't either, so just the fact that Giroux does, you know, he didn't do as much on the ice, but he did, you know, more off the ice. So I understand your point, and I could see why you could go with Crosby. There's no reason why not to.
Brad, what'd you think?
I'll say out of the four sports, hockey's my weakest one. But with that said, I love Claude Giroux, love him. But yeah, I agree. He should be considered, but I just don't feel like when you sit back and you look at the National Hockey League that you can consider him the most valuable player of the entire league. I just can't say that, and I agree that unfortunately that it's still Crosby, even though he does have Malkin on his side. I just that's where I'm at with it. I just can't. I guess much of the critics I hear, he doesn't put the team on his back, and though I love him, and I think he can grow and get there eventually, I just feel like the pressure, he folds under pressure.
What do you think, Frank?
Well, there's anybody that knows me knows I'm not a big fan of him. However, if anybody's going to sit there and say he should not be considered whatsoever, they don't know the game of hockey. But let's go back to what the one gentleman had said. His quote was, as the team goes, he goes. Well, that's not the way a captain is supposed to attack the ice. It's supposed to be the other way around. It's the way he goes, the team goes. That captain has to set precedent each and every night on that ice. He has to lead by example. He has to be an authoritative figure regardless. Now, if you're talking about Giroux, he was non-existent early in the season. We know that. That's documented. If you're, he's non-existent in big games. He's a no-show. If you play in the Islanders, he's your man. You're playing Pittsburgh. You're playing Washington. Nah, not going to happen. He disappears. That's what I don't like about Claude Giroux. And I'd be honest with you, I don't think he's deserving of that C on his chest right now. I do not.
Well, I think his game's still developing. Obviously, he's not 18 or 19, and obviously he's had the C on his chest for, you know, more than, you know, a couple months or so now. But I think his game is still developing, even if he doesn't win the Hart this year, which I think he won't. I think it'll go to Crosby, like Chet said, and a couple of you guys said as well. I do see him. I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of years he elevates his game from, like, you know, 85 to 90 points to closer to 100. But you're all right that he needs to play more consistent than just one or two great playoff series like he did in that Pittsburgh series, to play like that every night, because that's what a captain does. That's what we saw from Lindros. And you also have to do it in the regular season, too, on a consistent basis.
Yeah, you know, I think my thought on this is that Giroux plays old-school Flyers hockey. I mean, he's a grinder. You know, and that's how all Flyers seem to be, as grinders, where you have a guy like Crosby who, you know, he's a skill guy. He's not going to go in the corner and grind and make plays like Giroux does, but in turn, when it comes to just flat-out skill, Giroux is nowhere close to Crosby from a skill level, in my mind.
Yeah, Crosby's...
Hey, system guy. He's back to, you know, we talked about this for 25 years, or 30 years with the Flyers. They're system guys.
Hey, speaking of the NHL guys, with the Flyers no longer playing, does anybody have any rooting interest anymore? Are you going to root for the Rangers against the Canadiens? Are you going to root for the Blackhawks to win a third cup in 5 or 6 years? Does anybody care about the hockey anymore?
I do. I mean, I'm definitely – I was so glad to see Montreal beat. I mean, even though we're not as big of rivals with the Bruins now than we were back in the 70s and 80s, because – due to divisions and playoff matters, even though we obviously came back from 3-0 and down 3-0 in Game 7 back in 2010, I was still glad to see Montreal beat Boston, and I'll be rooting for them against the rival Rangers. I'm hoping for a sweep. And then if it's up to me, I don't want to see the Blackhawks win either. I mean, they're a great team, but I'd rather see somebody like Anaheim or even L.A., which is the Flyers out west, a lot of people call them, or Montreal.
Right.
Yeah, I want to see the Ducks win.
Over for me.
It's an extremely drawn-out season, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
I think as a Philly fan, now you got to root for the Ducks, because the Canadians have Briere, and it's just another Flyer we lose that's going to win a cup. Or New York, I just cannot root for New York. And then you got Chicago, who they beat us 2010, and I don't really want to see them have another cup, so... That's where I'm at with that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't want the players on L.A. to win again, because, you know, Richards and Carter and all the players on there would win another cup, but it'll be interesting nonetheless.
Right, right. Well, listen, we want to remind our listeners the phone lines are open throughout the show, 929-477-2855. Feel free to call in, chime in on any of these topics, and ask any questions you have of any of the individual guys at the party, or or make a comment yourself. So with that, Chet, I was thinking about you and your favorite team right now, the Philadelphia Phillies. We're about 25% into the season, and I wanted to ask you what you thought about the big three right now, Howard, Utley, and Rollins. How have they done? They've been here a long time. What's your thoughts on the big three?
Well, Utley is surprising the heck out of me, Bill. I mean, I really thought he was on the decline, you know, when he had those knee problems 2 years ago, but he played pretty much the whole season last year. And now this year, heck, he's certainly an all-star candidate, maybe even an MVP candidate if the team were better. I mean, Utley's got 3 homers, 20 ribbies, and he's hitting .343, which is just amazing. And you know, he's gotten 3 triples also, so he can still get around the bases. As far as Rollins and Howard, you know, they're showing their age. We talked the other night about the fact that Howard is still striking out way too much. I mean, that's always been a problem for him, but at least he does show some power. Now he's got 7 homers, 22 ribbies. The average about where you expect it, .257. I just hate seeing him striking out as much as he does. As for J-Roll, you know, he's hanging in there, hitting .260-something. He's got a few homers. He's got some stolen bases. He's going to be the Phillies' all-time hit leader, which I don't know if anybody really cares about that besides Jimmy Rollins. That'll happen within the next month or two. They're an old team, unfortunately, and I said going into the year that one of the keys was to stay healthy, and they've done that, and they're still in last place, 4.5 or 5 games out of first place. And by the way, they're already losing tonight, 3-0 in the first inning. So, you know, the season's been a disappointment for me because I thought they'd be a little better than this. I thought they'd be closer to .500 at least for now. I mean, there is a long way to go, so I'm not giving up on them. But Utley, yeah, thumbs up. The rest of the guys, eh.
Well, Fred, you were just down the ballpark the other night. I know. What's your take?
Yeah, it was like a Mike Trout game. It was pretty – because I was there 2 Saturdays before, and it was a Saturday night, and it was just no one in there. I wasn't used to that because I had season tickets in 08 and 07, and I was like, oh, or 09. Couldn't believe it. But, I mean, going into the season, everyone was like Utley, Howard, and and Rollins have to step up or they're old. And to me, they've done an adequate job. Utley's done excellent, and like I forget the last person who spoke said, they did, you know. But the main issue is the young players coming up and the bullpen. That's where the issues are. So to me, they're doing a fine job is what we're asking of them. But if we had a bullpen and we had young players not creating errors or an outfielder that could throw the ball to second base, I think that would change. We'd have 3 more wins and be a little bit closer to .500, you know. So I think you give it to the trade deadline, but and you see where you're at. But the pitching staff has done excellent as well. I mean, Burnett, I couldn't believe I didn't really like that signing, and he's pitching very well. So that surprised me.
Frank, any thoughts on the Fightins?
Yeah, I mean, where are you going to go with this? I mean, you could start with the general manager. That's a big issue. I mean, you go right down the line. I mean, Brian Howard, I mean, there's quite a few executives that are actually watching this guy and saying, he's just a guy out there right now who's flailing away. I mean, he can't sit on his back leg to drive anything anymore. And basically what I'm saying right now is he doesn't even have a sense of what a strike is or what a ball is. He's lost out there. You also have – now, the gentleman who was just on said, you know, the starting pitchers do an admirable job, but these guys aren't putting in the innings. They're not getting deeper than the sixth, early seventh inning. So you're tearing down that bullpen, and they're getting a lot of innings. They're never going to make the full season. And then you've got your closer who's not even throwing 90 miles an hour. I mean, he has no out pitch anymore. His split doesn't anything. I mean, even when you look at Papelbon coming in, his body language is awful. He's got no energy at all out there. I mean, that's typical of the way he goes. Then you go down the line. You talk about Dominic Brown. I mean,
ooh, yeah.
Say what you want. That guy, it's an issue. I mean, and a lot of people are missing the fact. You know, Wally Joyner did a hell of a job with him last year. And when he left, and he's in, where is he at? Detroit now. You have to wonder, you know, was last year, that first half of last year, an aberration? I mean, because all we see now is that same confused Dominic Brown. Chase Utley's a stud. I don't think you're ever going to see Chase Utley of 06 and 07, but the guy's doing an admirable job. And then you talk about Jimmy Rollins. I mean, for God's sake. He got his first hit since March 1st the other day. I mean, there was one point I specifically remember hearing this stat that he hit 14 straight balls in the air. He's a pop-up machine. It's been that way since his MVP season was his last very productive season. That was it. Ever since then, it's been on a decline. They have major issues with this squad right now, major.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree. Kyle, what do you think?
Yeah, a bunch of what people were saying. Rollins, as bad as he's been, I mean, he's hitting a 275, which isn't too bad. And like you were saying about Dominic Brown, this year, 221, him and Rivera have been the issue. And Rivera was out with the cold, I think, tonight, so they replaced him with John Mayberry Jr., and they moved up Rollins to the leadoff and Chooch to the second spot, which Chooch has really been hitting well. I don't know what his average is when he hits in the second spot, but I like him in that spot. And this year, Brown, 221 average, only one home run in 37 games, only a 282 OBP. That's just not going to get it done, like you were saying. You know, I think maybe part of it, you know, Wally Jr.'s effect on him last year, and, you know, obviously players go through slumps throughout the year, and Revere's just been just as bad. You know, he's hitting 268 now, and 284 OBP for a leadoff guy is just not going to cut it. I like him as a player, and he's a good stolen base threat, but they're going to have to teach him to take some more pitches. And as for the bullpen, sans Papelbon, the whole bullpen's been horrible. Papelbon's been, despite his decline a little bit, he's actually been pretty good this year. Despite 0-1 record, he has a 1.76 ERA and a whip under 1. So, you know, we'll see what they can do. I don't expect this team to win more than 74 games. So, like you were saying, I think Frank was, they have a lot of problems. So it's going to take a couple years for them to get back up. The bullpen's bad. They're over the hill. And they got, you know, obviously more issues, too, with the young guys as well.
Yeah, I think you made a great point, Frank, with Dominic Brown. I think with all the stuff that's been going on with this club, with the bullpen and the Howard and the striking out and things like that, Dom Brown's kind of been under the radar, and he keeps getting his name written down in that lineup, and he keeps not producing. But there hasn't been a whole lot of talk about it. And like I say, I think he's under the radar just a little bit, and he's having an awful season.
Do you guys remember? Also, let's keep in mind that we're in a different era now. Chet and Bill can kind of equate to my stance on this, where I can remember J.R. Richard, Nolan Ryan, Jim Cott, Tom Seaver, our very own Steve Carlton, guys going 140, 150 pitches a game without even blinking. These guys, this pitch count thing anymore, these guys are specialists. They can't even pitch 2 days in a row.
I'm with you on that. I never understood the whole pitch count thing. You know, what has changed about the male body over the last 40 years? When guys were throwing 150 pitches back then, and they were surviving, they, you know, were pretty much avoiding the disabled list more so than guys are now who throw, you know, 110, 115 pitches. I never understood that. If a guy's still feeling good and he's at 120 pitches, keep him in there. Why not? I just never understood that whole pitch count nonsense.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I was listening the other day. One of the downsides of having the MLB package is oftentimes you get the visiting team's feed. And the other day during the Mets game, I got the Mets feed, and Ron Darling is one of the broadcasters for the Mets, and he was talking about Tom Seaver. And he said that Tom Seaver used to say he didn't need a pitch count. His arm told him when he was at about 130. And he knew at about 130 he was going to start losing it a little bit, and that was his pitch count. He knew,
and
his,
you know,
arm knew and told him when to stop.
Your body.
The other thing. The other thing back in the 70s, most teams went with four-man rotations, so they would have only 3 days rest in between starts instead of four. So
right.
It is a different era, that's for sure.
Yeah, nowadays.
Yeah, I'm a younger guy, and I couldn't agree more with you guys. I don't even understand why they come out after 100 pitches. You saw Hamels go 133, I think it was, the other day, and that's with the highest of his career. And to me, I was looking at that, I'm like, back in the day, I don't know if I have the stats right, but I remember Schilling throwing way more than that. I don't even think they really kept count. So I agree with you guys. I don't even understand the pitch count. The human body, you would think, gets stronger over the years, not weaker.
Yeah, nowadays, if it's if a guy leads the league, it's probably at like 250 innings pitched. Now, whereas back then it was like 320, 330 for the league leaders and Nolan Ryan. Guy, you know, they were just strong, like you were saying. You know, the human body doesn't change. And like another person was saying, your body knows, you know, specifically some guys know better than others or more perceptive, but your body is going to tell you when your arm's starting to get weak and dead arm and all that stuff. So, and that's why our bullpen, part of why, I mean, also we don't have talent either, why our bullpen's suffering, because like somebody else said, our starters are going so, you know, are not going as deep into games, like Hamels, Kendrick, mostly the guys at the end of the rotation. I think Hamels will warm up, but they definitely need to get more out of their starters.
All right. Well, listen, we got a caller here, so let's invite somebody into the party right quick. Hey, go ahead. Welcome to the party. Whoop. Hey, you there? Maybe they're not there. There they come. Hey, welcome to the party. Hey, go ahead. Who
Kevin,
we got?
This is Kevin. How are you guys doing today?
Hey,
good,
Kevin. The Sports Junkie's on.
Yeah, that's the Sports Junkie. Yeah, are you guys? I love the show. It's been really enjoyed it, and I have a kind of a two-part question for the panel. It's an Eagles question. Just kind of curious what everybody, like, if we were looking 3 years down the road, what everybody, where do people think, you know, Nick Foles will be? You know, is he going to be, you know, top 10 in the league, top 15, is, you know, upper half? And, you know, it's only been really one big year, and it seems like, you know, they're putting a lot of stock on him. And then as a second part of that, if he's not a top 10 quarterback 3 years from now, can this team still be a big Super Bowl contending team with what I would call, you know, maybe average to a little bit above average quarterbacking?
All right, great question. Go ahead, Fred, what do you think?
Yeah, it's hard to make that call. I definitely know, though, he's not going to be successful if he's getting rushed up the middle constantly. They have to shore up that offensive line. And he had one of the greatest years ever as a quarterback, but at the same time, it was the system. That's the huge deal with that. But then if you look at any great quarterback, they said that about Montana and Brady, and not that I'm comparing him to them, but I think he definitely can be successful. I think it really comes down to the offensive line. And then on your second part of your question was, oh, if he isn't, where are we at? Yeah, I'm not sure. Chip Kelly claims he can just plug the quarterback into the system and play to his strengths. We were okay with Vic in there. He was having a good year, but he was turning the ball over left and right. So, yeah, that's a tough question to answer after the first year. For me, anyway.
Frank, what do you think?
Well, so far as Foles, you have to love what the fella did. I mean, he was forced into action, forced into this offense. His turnover ratio was unreal. It was second to none. The guy was phenomenal last year. Can he keep that up? He's going to have to. If a guy comes in and did what he did last year, I have to believe there's something there, something real that's there. The problem I have right now is, I have to believe, and now we saw last year when Barkley had to come in on some cleanup duty, you know, he's totally not ready. I'm not committed on him anyway. You know, who knows what the deal is. I think Sanchez is just he's a safety blanket. I think being a veteran and being down the road a little bit, I think that's exactly what that pickup there was for. But there's no doubt in my mind they're going to have to draft another quarterback in the next couple of years for some tutelage and start working under Foles and working through the program here.
I agree. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, I think Foles is the real deal. You know, obviously, a lot of times if the players, starting quarterback gets injured, or if he's having you know, up and down success, or he's just bad, you go with the backups. And obviously, Sanchez is a veteran guy. He'll be all right if Foles gets injured for a couple games or a couple snaps, or if we're up big and we need a guy to come in to, you know, to kind of take his place that way, you know, to prevent injury. So I definitely think he's the real deal. I mean, last year he did have a record year, you know, set the all-time record for TD to INT ratio, 27-2, 119.2 QB rating, and then 64 completion percentage. I don't think, you know, player does that if they're a bad player. I know, obviously, I know we had you know, some great players on offense with or without Jackson, but also a lot of that's him. I don't see him having that good of a year as he did last year as far as the, you know, setting records. But I see, like, you know, 28 to 30 touchdowns, 10 or 11 interceptions, you know, a rating around 100, maybe a little below just because of how good he was last year. And the I don't think they're going to need to bring in anybody. And I see him staying with us for at least 4 or 5 more years and completing what he did last year success-wise in the next couple of years. It just, obviously, the defense is going to be part of it. But I definitely see us carrying him, carrying us.
I'm a big Foles fan. I think he's the quarterback of the future. I think he will be a top-10 quarterback for sure. I think he showed enough this year to convince me of that. I mean, as long as he's got good enough guys around him, including the offensive line, of course. But he has so many offensive weapons, and I think Chip knows how to utilize the talents that Foles have. So I think he's going to be fun to watch over the next few years. And, no, he's not going to put up the same kind of touchdown-interception ratio as he did this year, 27-2. But like Mark Eccles said the other night, if he has 28-10, hey, I would take that if the team is, you know, winning 10 or 11 games. Why not? So, yeah, Foles is going to be fun to watch, and I think he will be a top-10 quarterback for sure in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think he could be even better than that, depending on, you know, his development.
Yeah, I guess the one thing that I like about Foles, obviously you can't say anything bad about the season he had. You know, the numbers speak for themselves, and if you watch the game, you saw a guy get better each week. But I think the thing that really makes me think he probably is the deal is because he was drafted by the other coach who thought enough of him to make him a second-round pick, and now this coach took him and is making him into a player. So you have two coaches in the National Football League who both have very high opinions of this kid, and he sure produced on the field. So I'm going to support him as well and say he's the deal.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's also keep in mind here that the Eagles are getting all the heat right now. So this guy's going to command some serious dinero after next year. They're going to have to pay up big time on this guy, and I'm sure they're ready and prepared for it with some of the acquisitions and what they have done.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, Kevin, anything to add?
I mean, yeah, I would probably say that I agree with most what everybody said. I think he will be. I think he does have the potential to be in that top range, and I think, you know, having the big offensive coach will help him. I mean, you know, Montana had Walsh, Marino had Shula, you know, even Johnny Unitas had Shula, and Weave Eubank. So, I mean, there's, you know, I think, you know, kind of one good, they go hand in hand, and I think, you know, Chip does have that great offensive mind, and I do think that, you know, if he does, I think he's the key guy. And I think, but also I think if he doesn't perform, if something would happen, I think Chip wouldn't be afraid to pull the trigger on him either. So
Right.
You know,
all right, well, Kevin, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Yep. Okay. Take care, guys.
All right. Hey, Fred, I wanted to try to get around and get a couple more things done here pretty quickly, but I just wanted to ask you because I've heard enough about you, seen enough of your posts and things you do, and I just really want to know if it's true. If it's really true, do you have a little man crush going on with Chip Kelly?
Nah, that's Bob Sullivan. Now, I have a crush. I'll criticize him. I just happen to agree with the way he's doing things, and I just like that he spurns the media. He answers them, but he spurns them in a cocky way, and then I also like the way the whole organization's going. So after year one, I was happy with the production, and I know you're a big Andy Reid guy, but he just wore me down so – beat me down to the point, I guess, anything new and exciting was going to I was going to be attracted to. So, yeah, I got a little crush, I guess.
How about you, Frank?
It's exciting. I mean, you know, one of the quarterbacks that I had a pleasure to work with is Pat Devlin, who's with the Dolphins now. He was on our squad out in Downingtown. You know, we ran a spread offense with him involved, and when we thought, you know, as we progressed through that, that was the most exciting thing I've seen come around in football in a long time. And then when I saw and had an opportunity to start studying this offense and view it from training camp and back in the Oregon days with him, it's amazing. The guy, you know, keep in mind, the guy, he lives, sleeps, and breathes football. He's single. He's not married. It's what he does. He loves the game of football, and he's a genius. He's a genius. I love it. It's going to get better.
That's a great point, the single thing and all the football. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's a great point.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, I really think he's a good coach. And I mean, I don't have a man crush on in football. I mean, I'm, you know, big Utley and Drew guys, but I really like his system, Kelly's system. And last year, a lot of people were saying it wasn't going to translate in the NFL. And then he had all his other, you know, training camp stuff, just keeping guys in order, even off the field, and just making sure conditioning and stuff like that, that they were, you know, taking care of themselves and doing the fundamentals. I really like what he's doing. I loved a lot of things about Reed, but I also hate a lot of things about Reed. And it wasn't just because he was here for, you know, over a decade and a half. It was just because a lot of things he did were annoying to a lot of fans. And obviously, a lot of that gets overshadowed if you win here. Not just divisions and 10 or 11 games and playoff berths, but obviously we know he never brought home the Lombardi. But I think a lot of that got overshadowed. But no, I definitely like what he's been implementing and doing so far. I really see big things for him.
I think we just unanimously elected Chip Kelly the next mayor of Philadelphia, but I'm wondering how much we're going to... I wonder how much we're going to sing his praises.
Do I not get a vote?
Oh, come on, you love him too, Bill. But what are we going to say next year if they go 5-11 in 2014? That'll be interesting.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
listen, we got about 5 minutes left. I want to get one more topic in here before we get away. And Frank, I want to throw it out to you. I wanted to know what your thoughts were. On the Flyers' move of bringing Ron Hextall in as the GM and booting Paul Holmgren upstairs to the president's position. Let's hit that real quick.
Well, I actually love the move. I mean, you know, there was a few people that were kind of debating this with me on Facebook a little bit, and they were like, well, you know, what position has he ever held to warrant this? Well, you know, he was the vice president of operations before. You know, he was a general manager before. The guy has the experience. He has the know-how. He has the worthwhile. The guy's a gamer. And the bottom line is, you had Holmgren making these decisions just nonstop every year, and it became stale, and it didn't work, and it continues not to work. So I think, you know, I think when you have a fan base that, anybody that lives around here like we do knows that people, there should be a shrine for Hextall, because up until Mason came along, we've never replaced him. Now, I think the guy's done an admirable job where he was at before, and so in my opinion, I think we're going to be okay with him. You know, we still have a road to see, but I like it better than what we had.
All right, what do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, I agree. Actually, Hextall, he's had several experiences. He was, after his playing days concluded in 98, he was a Flyers scout from 99 to, I think, about 03 under Bob Clark. Then they promoted him to player personnel under the Flyers until another former Flyer and Dean Lombardi, who was also a scout here under Clark, whisked him away to L.A. to be in a part of that organization in 2006. So he was assistant manager there for, you know, over 6-7 seasons, and he won the Cup there 2 years ago. And obviously they've won, you know, numerous playoff runs since then on top of that. So he really wants to build in the draft, which I think is key. He really doesn't want to make the big splash unless it's necessary, which a lot of times was Holmgren's MO. And obviously we know the Brisgal thing didn't work out. I think part of that was Ed Snyder and a couple other moves, like, you know, the Bobrovsky deal. But I really like it. I think it's a step up, and Holmgren gets to do something else and stay in the organization, because they promoted him to president, which was vacant after last December when Peter Luko left. So I'm all for the move. I think it's an A-plus move.
Yeah, you know how I feel about it, too. I'm a big fan of Ron Hextall. I think he's an intelligent guy. I like him as a player. Of course, he's won a Stanley Cup now as an assistant GM with the L.A. Kings. He knows his stuff. He does his homework. He said a couple of times how this was his dream job, so I know he's going to work hard at it. And I have a lot of faith in Hextall, and, you know, hopefully he's going to make the right moves that will get the Flyers to the next level.
Yeah, I think he will.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, when you hear Hextall, the first thing I think is when I was in, like, seventh or eighth grade and that when he was the goalie for the Flyers, and we haven't had a goalie, like I think Frank said, since now we have Mason, who's the first light we've seen since then. But as a GM, Paul Holmgren, it was just getting stale and boring, and they needed to make a change in some way. Hextall has been around, it seems, and then he won the Cup with L.A., so he has knowledge other than just the Flyers organization. Though he's been in the organization, he has other influences besides just the Flyers brass. So I think that's huge that he'll bring a different, view or opinion on how to get there.
Approach.
And you know, I agree with that. I agree with that wholeheartedly. That, to me, you know, getting outside the organization was probably probably critical, and you're exactly right. He's been around some other people besides the old group here in the Flyers organization. So, yeah, I like that part a lot as well.
Yeah, and Holmgren had been here, you know, over 7 years. When Clark resigned in October of 2006, you know, we all remember that horrible Flyers 06-07 season that got the JVR pick, which you probably should have gotten the number one overall. But so he's been here for a while, you know, almost a decade, a couple years shy, and obviously he'll stay with the team. So I thought it was a good move on both sides to bring because a couple of analysts were saying that a bunch of fans were thinking that he was going to go to Washington because there were a couple vacancies as far as GM and other organizations like Washington, Vancouver. But actually, they just wanted to. Holmgren had seen enough of it, and they felt that he was ready. So I thought it was a perfect timing.
Yeah, and there's one in Pittsburgh today as well.
Yeah,
although they fired Ray Sherrill, but they did not make a final decision yet, contrary to early reports about Bilsma. They're going to let the new GM make the decision of whether Bilsma is going to stay as coach.
Oh, Bilsma?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Well, that's bringing us to the top of our hour. Man, did it go fast. I sure enjoyed the party. It went good. I hope everybody enjoyed being part of it. I'd like to thank you guys and your passionate Philly sports fans, you're always well-versed, have your opinions, have your knowledge, have your facts. And so I'd like to thank Fred Hugo, Frank Kolachny, and Kyle Lutz for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Awesome.
Hey, I got two words for you before we sign off because he's going to be fun to watch. Johnny Football.
Well, you know what? I had that as a topic for us to talk about, but we don't have enough time. But I did hear something the other day. I was on the road, and I was listening to the college football radio. And in the first weekend after the draft, they sold more Johnny Manziel jerseys than they did Tim Tebow, Reggie Bush, and RG3 put together.
Wow.
They sold 14,000 season tickets immediately after the draft.
Yeah.
Yes. So
well, let's see if he can play.
That's good, though. Well, Chet, as always, I want to thank you for being part of this. Always fun to work with you.
My pleasure, Bill. And now we're going to root on the lottery balls Tuesday night.
That's right. Ping-pong ball. 76ers and the lottery.
Yeah,
okay, well, I'd also like to thank Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, who helps organize our activities. So this is Bill Furman, hoping you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Chet and I on our regular Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable Wednesday night, May 21st at 7 p.m. to talk all things Philly sports. You can listen through our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.